Hey, how many of you use some kind of build tool? Good, awesome. And actually, anyone use NPM scripts as their primary build tool today? Yes, okay, one or two people. This means you're going to learn something. Awesome. Okay, so being from Mozilla, I'm a little bit biased, but you know, for all the pain and weirdness that is writing stuff for that runs in browsers, I really do love it. And the reason I love it is because, you know, it's still young enough that we can make our own decisions about what we want to do. We'll actually be able to make decisions about how we can think critically about how we build things, as well as the community we want to support it. So the thing is, I kind of hate build tools. But, you know, every time I need to use Gradle on Android, or, you know, maybe when I'm working on something written by someone who hates JavaScript, so I have to use Make, and, you know, literally anything, I kind of end up in this situation where things started out so well and then just went to utter garbage. You know, anybody, you know what I'm talking about, right? And I think to some extent, this is actually a kind of disastrous intersection of two theories of how systems work. So the first theory is John Gall's Systems Bible, How Systems Work, and Especially How They Fail. I highly recommend it if you're in for a fun read. And it asserts that despite all efforts, systems will grow until they fill the known universe. And if you've ever seen a grunt file, you'll know what I'm talking about, right? And if you combine that with the irony of automation, which is basically that as automated systems grow in both utility and complexity, they become less and less understandable to the operator, it's actually not that surprising that over time, your build configurations and automated systems will fail you. Like, I love robot fails. But this is essentially what happens, right? You get a big, huge system, it expands and expands, and eventually you just have no idea what's going on. If you're willing to consider the nature of the things you're putting in it, if you spend some time upfront designing for simplicity, and if you're willing to make the right compromises, not just compromises that are fashionable. So there's a couple of reasons why I want to show you how to do this with NPM scripts. And the first is that I actually think the environment in which NPM scripts run is particularly well suited to designing simple, composable, powerful front-end automated tasks. And this is not actually an original or new concept. A lot of people have been writing articles about it even as far back as, you know, 2013. This is an article by Substack. At the time, though, the main criticisms back then were that NPM wasn't really quite powerful enough, and also the biggest issue was that, you know, it didn't really work for Windows users. And Substack's answer at that time was kind of like, oh, well, use Unix, which, you know, doesn't always work for everybody. But I think since the release of NPM 2.0 earlier this year and now 3.0, you can actually start doing this stuff in production. It is powerful enough. The second reason is that I've actually had some success with this approach. This year, I switched a team of developers over for maintaining gulp files that were like 200 to 400 lines long to using NPM scripts exclusively. And the result was that our front-end builds were more reliable, more resistant to bloat, and more importantly, our entire team was able to actually understand, debug, and reason with them, except instead of just like the one or two people that know the file. You people are probably those people, right? Yes? We have the know the gulp file people in the room. So let's dive into some code. What is so special about the NPM script environment? Why is it so well suited to dealing with things we care about, like processing files, compiling code, running development servers, etc.? So who here uses Node or NPM in your front-end build, in your workflow already? Some kind of Node tools. Like, do you use Less or Sass or something? Well, actually, Sass might be written in Ruby, but, you know, something written in Node, some of you? There's a lot of stuff out there, especially for front-end builds. If you're using Gulp or Grunt, that's obviously written in Node as well. It's definitely a huge ecosystem for front-end builds. It used to be just for Node, but now, you know, used all over the world for front-end as well. So this is what a very simple script looks like. You've probably seen this before, whether you're using Gulp or whether, you know, you're using somebody else's package. The interface is very simple. You define each script under a target in package.json, and you run it in the command line by calling npm run x. So npm run test or npm run whatever. So in this case, we can also call npm test. So you probably use npm start, npm test, npm install. That's what a script looks like. But besides defining standard scripts like start and test, you can create custom tasks under any name you want. So in this case, we've called our script foo. You call npm run foo in the command line, and you're done. The real magic of npm run, though, is that you're able to leverage both the capabilities of your shell environment, which is very powerful in its own right, as well as any node executables you've installed as local dependencies or dev dependencies. So you can choose how much you want to take from your shell environment, how much you want to use from node in your build scripts. And then all of that is sort of bound together within the npm life cycle. So your shell environment, which might be something like bash or the Windows command line, was pretty much designed to chain tasks and handle files. And that's really good news, because that's probably what the bulk of what you're doing is. You're going to be taking a bunch of files, copying them over, maybe compiling them, maybe concatenating them. This is like a lot of what you're doing. So many of these utilities are surprisingly cross-platform compatible, such as piping data with a pipe, the greater than sign to redirect standard out, the double ampersand to run tasks in series. Unfortunately, many commands, however, are not cross-platform compatible. And actually, I do want to ask, how many of you use Windows to develop primarily? Okay, that's quite a few of you. I usually get maybe like two people in my talks. how many of you use Mac or Unix? Okay, so we're pretty evenly split. You know, there's a common perception among a lot of front-end devs, at least at most conferences that I go to, that almost everyone uses Mac or Linux. And like, while that's true in some companies or some communities, it's definitely not the case for everyone, and thankfully not the case for you. So especially if you're developing an open source project or open source software at all, you should know that a lot of developers, particularly students and new front-end developers, are developing on Windows. It's really important if you're supporting your whole open source community of contributors to support Windows. So this is where the second part of this magical npm script equation comes in. For almost anything you need that might have been in that might be different in Windows or Unix, you can actually use a node implementation that's an equivalent, and that's just basically an npm install away. So for example, if you're doing something like if you need to make a directory, you can use the package makedirp. So you're going to install that as a node dependency. And that way, you can just basically use node for everything you want to be cross-platform compatible. Some of you might know that in Unix environments, you can run things in parallel with a single ampersand. You can install something in node to run your task in parallel, like a watch task. That's cool. On the node side of things, npm actually adds executables like this to your node modules directory, in the node modules directory, to your path right away. So that's really cool because, you don't have to deal with any path nonsense or, searching where your node modules directory is. It gets added directly to the path. You can call foo if it's installed as a dependency. You can call it directly, and that's awesome. So remember this, a good automated system takes advantage of the natural interface presented by its component parts. So I think one of the biggest downsides of most JS build tools out there is that they rely on a plugin ecosystem. Plugins add an extra layer of complexity and vectors for bugs. They create more code to maintain, and they obscure the source of what you're actually trying to do. On the other hand, almost any tool you're using, like linting, running tests, Browserify, Webpack, any of that stuff, it already has a command line interface in the source, like in the package itself. And that means you can use npm run with all your favorite stuff out of the box. So let's look at a really common example. Anyone use Browserify, Webpack, something like that? Some of you? Oh, not too many of you. Okay, so this is like a module that helps you if you want to build your JavaScript in modules and then sort of like as if you're in Node and then build it all together as one. You could use Browserify. This is what the command looks like for the command line interface. So what we're doing here is we're calling Browserify with source maps and transforming our React code so that we can compile JSX into an output file. So, reading an entry file, output to an output file. This is what the same task looks like in Grunt. It's a lot bigger. There's, you have to have a plugin for Browserify, so that's already more code. And this is what it looks like in Gulp. That's a huge difference in terms of complexity and maintainability for your code. And to be fair, Browserify was definitely designed with a command line interface in mind. It sort of prioritizes, you know, using your command line. And other tools might not be as drastic, but this is a pretty great example of how, you know, one line of code can replace 20 or 30 lines. If you don't like adding a lot of options in line, you can definitely delegate configuration to a tool. For example, Webpack, you can have a Webpack config file in your root directory. Just call it from your script. That's pretty cool. You also see here I'm using an argument syntax that's new in that now works in NPM 2.0, which allows you to make a lot more powerful scripts. I'll talk about that in more detail later. So this is just a few more examples of what you can do. You can compile your CSS. You can run your tests with Karma. In that task, I'm actually running Karma with a separate coverage environment variable. You can lint stuff. You can run a server like you would in a gulp, like a gulp task that would run a server. All really cool. So the other interesting thing we get with scripts is that they run in the context of the NPM lifecycle, which is really useful if you're already using NPM to install dependencies. So in NPM scripts, some are considered special, so they're triggered when events happen. So if you're, for example, if you're doing NPM install in your root directory, you can also have a pre-install and a post-install that are triggered before and after, respectively, of your install task. So let's say maybe you want to run some tests directly after your dependencies are installed, or you want to kick off a build. You can use post-install. So these are some pretty, these are some pretty common ones. NPM version is, anyone use NPM version to publish? It's actually a tool you can use with NPM to actually add tags. So if you're using Semver to tag your libraries, you can actually use that. So when you're using NPM version patch, for example, you can say NPM version patch dash m upgrade for the lols, and then it will actually make a new tag that's version 0.0.1. So you can make minor tags like a version bump, and then push that up to GitHub or up to NPM when you're publishing. That's a cool tool. You can use the pre-version and post-version NPM lifecycle hooks so that when you create that tag, you can automatically, before creating it, run your tests, which will fail. It won't actually make the tag if your tests fail, as well as your build. And after you create the tag, you can push it to, you know, GitHub. You can publish it to NPM. So that's a whole deployment, whole deployment workflow right with NPM lifecycle scripts. So the other thing is you can use your lifecycle hooks on your custom scripts by prepending pre and post. So for this example, we have a task called potato. Yeah, I love potatoes. And every time I run NPM run potato, NPM will also run pre-potato and post-potato, which is pretty cool. Awesome. So you can organize your scripts that way. So now that we have a good start in interfacing with all the tools we're going to need, let's go to the part about designing for simplicity. How do we do this with NPM scripts? One of my favorite talks on the subject of simplicity in software design is Simple Made Easy by Rich Hickey, who's the author of Clojure. You might not agree with everything he says, but it's definitely worth checking out if you're into simplicity and software design. So the most relevant properties of simplicity to our discussion here, I think, are that components of an automated system are simple when they have a single well-defined objective, and that good tasks, good complex tasks are composed of well-defined simple ones. Now, you're all good developers, so you know this and you apply this to your code, but I think we can also do this to our NPM scripts. So let's take a look at that. Let's start with a task that doesn't fit our definition of simple. So this task does three things. It lints our code, that's ESLint. It does some style checking with JSCS. And finally, it runs our unit tests with Karma. And this is fine if you only really have one script, but as your scripts get more complex, you want to probably break this down into more understandable parts. So the first thing we could do is separate out each task into its own script. So now we have, you know, a lint, a JSCS, and a unit NPM script separately, and then call NPM run in our parent task. So we're using and to run these tasks in series, which works both in Windows and Unix-like environments. It's pretty simple, but it's already a lot more readable as to, like, what each thing does. But now we want to take this a step further. We can actually introduce a scaffolding tool, and this is really cool. I highly recommend you check this out. It's called npm run all. You can install it from npm. So you just do npm install npm run all. It's a tiny module I really like that helps us run multiple npm tasks in series or in parallel. As you can see here, we pass the name of our three tasks, and it will run them in series, which is really cool. And by the way, this also works on Windows, so it'll work in both Unix and Windows. It also has like a glob-like feature, so if you have a bunch of tasks under a namespace, in this case, we've used tests, and we run npm run all tests with a star next to the colon, it'll actually search for all of your tests defined under that namespace, or sorry, your scripts defined under that namespace, and run them in series. Of course, you can run them with parallel, dash dash parallel as well. So this is really cool and powerful. So this is an example of a large script. This is something that might be several hundred lines in gulp or grunt. The first section, we've created a set of watch tasks, which are useful for local development, and we're running them in parallel with npm start. So this will watch your JavaScript, watch your static files and copy them. We've got a CSS task that compiles less. And then finally, we have a build section that we use to build out our static files, and it runs once. So that's really cool. You can see in the start, we're watching all of our files as well as running a server in parallel, all this working on Windows, in any system. So that's pretty complicated stuff. It's probably most of what you need for a complex front-end build. It's how many lines is that? Not very many lines, under 20 lines. That's pretty cool. The other thing you might have noticed in here is the argument syntax. So in npm 2, we get an argument syntax we can use. It's you put two dashes, and then you can follow it by any arguments. So you can call npm run your task followed by arguments. So you can reuse npm tasks. This is really helpful for composability because you can define a task once and reuse it with different kinds of things. So what about when things, you split up your scripts, you've used arguments. What if your script gets too complicated? It's just too much to fit in one line. Most of the times you're going to be using other people's command line interfaces, but you can write your own too, which is really cool. So all you need to do that is you need to create a bin directory or a scripts bin or something, make a JavaScript file, and then you can call that JavaScript file in your script, so like with all your JavaScript tasks, as a script. So in this case, I've made a task called guacamole because I love guacamole. And although it's not complicated, in this case, we have a bunch of complicated steps. So we're putting it in our own file called guacamole.js, and then we're calling it under our guacamole script. So the first thing in your JS file, all you have to do is add an interpreter directive to say, this is a node. This is a node script. Run it as node, and then you can do whatever stuff you want. So you can, if I say console log when I run my script, it'll print out console log. If I can do some file manipulation, I can, compile files. I can do whatever I want in that script file. So if you want to accept arguments, you have a lot of options. I like to use a module called Minimus to help with argument parsing. So this is what it would look like this would look like in your file. So you're parsing, you're looking for a spicy argument, and then you're actually doing some spicy tasks based on that argument. So what that looks like when you're calling it in line, now you pass that argument just like this. So now that we have spicy, it will check, does our arguments have spicy in it? And if so, it'll run the spicify task. I don't know, guacamole, spicy guacamole, that sounds kind of weird, actually. But yeah, so this is what it looked like. Of course, you can also publish that tool to NPM if it's generally useful. If you think more people want to make guacamole with their front-end JavaScript, publish it, NPM publish guacamole, and there you go. Now you can just NPM install guacamole and use it just like you use all your other command line interface tasks. That's pretty much it. All you need to do is define your package JSON, a link to where that CLI is, and you're done. Okay, so we've learned how to leverage the power of Node and Shell. We're talking about designing our system for simplicity. What are the trade-offs? What is hard about using NPM scripts? So NPM scripts are not as full-featured as something like Gradle that can do dependency management, between tasks or caching of partial builds. You know, if you need something that's really complex like that, you're going to have to use something that's more full-featured, like Make or Gradle or whatever you're using. But chances are, if you're doing front-end web dev, you're not dealing with build times on the order of 10 minutes or something. You know, you're not building Firefox. You're not building something that takes forever to build. It's, you know, fairly simple, fairly fast tasks. So probably you can trade off a little bit of that performance for simple mental models. You know, NPM scripts are written as plain text in JSON. We don't have variables. We can't do something like create an extensible build system that will work in multiple directories. This might seem kind of gross, but for the vast majority of projects, I think reducing your file to 15 to 20 lines is a fine trade-off for having some repeated paths. It's not too bad. I'm not going to lie, especially if your project needs to support both operating systems, like both Unix-like and Windows. It's a little bit hard. You're going to have to take some time to learn what is and isn't cross-compatible. Personally, though, I think the benefits are well worth it, and it will give you a lot of useful transferable skills and awareness when you're dealing with contributors on different platforms. Obviously, if you have some kind of continuous integration available for both Windows and Unix-like environments, that will help. And finally, something that our JS build tools have going for them, that this method does not and is community. You know, because of the plugin-less nature of writing NPM scripts, you don't get communities of developers congregating around developing, you know, a Browserify plugin or a Less plugin. So we're going to have to figure out some way of sharing best practices and conventions, you know, in a way that doesn't involve building more code and writing plugins. So how, if you're interested, how can you get involved? Try it out. Be vocal about the problems you have. There's quite a few minor existing bugs in NPM Runall or Node implementations for in Windows. And, you know, share your best practices if you have and file bugs on existing CLIs. For example, one thing that people have mentioned a lot is that the error reporting isn't great in some CLIs. So, you know, file a bug and say, hey, I'm using Browserify and your error reporting is less than great. Do you think you could improve it? I have some suggestions for how you can improve those actual source files. Yeah, and that's pretty much it. I'd love to see what you make, or NPM run, that is.